Well, next hour, we start open lines. This hour, we'll take your phone calls, questions, and stories about Bigfoot with Timothy Renner right here on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you. We'll get to your calls, Timothy Renner with us as we talk about Bigfoot. And now you're going to expand your articles and your research, Pennsylvania, the West Coast. Where are you headed next, Tim?
I think I'm going to come back to the East Coast. I'll bounce around. I grew up in Maryland, so I think next I'm going to hit Maryland. I probably won't have enough to do a whole book on Maryland, so it'll probably be some combination of East Coast states.
Would you say that the sightings are prevalent all over North America?
Yeah. Yeah, they you can find them everywhere. Of course, some areas have more and some have fewer, but you can find sightings in just about every state, I think, except Hawaii.
What can you estimate the population to be, the Bigfoot population?
Oh, that is a very, very difficult question. I think it's a lot higher than anyone would ever guess. And I think they live a lot closer to populated areas than anyone would ever guess. But I couldn't make a really good guess as to the actual number of creatures.
Have you gotten any reports of little small Bigfoot, like babies?
Yes. Well, we have a creature in Pennsylvania that lives along the Susquehanna River that they call the Albatwitch. And that is a 3 to 4 foot tall hair-covered creature. They're usually not, well, they're, to my knowledge, they're never seen with big creatures. So we don't assume that these are, you know, small children Bigfoots. These are a separate creature, we think. And those reports go back to the first settlers and even the Native Americans before we got here, of course, had stories of them.
Amazing stuff. It's just incredible work that you've been doing, Tim. And there are other great Bigfoot researchers out there, too.
Oh, absolutely.
And
there's room for more, too.
Yeah, I think so, too. Is it a field that needs more younger people?
I think it needs more people of all stripes. I mean, you know, young, old, I think if people are interested and they mostly, I think what you need is an open mind. Don't get locked in on any one thing because there's really no such thing, and this isn't my original quote, but it's people are fond of saying there's really no such thing as a Bigfoot expert because, you know, we haven't caught one. There's none in a zoo. So what you need is just an open mind because we can't make any hard declarations. This is what it is, and this is, you know, why it does this, because we really don't know yet.
Let's go to the phones now. Andy in Carson, California, to get us started. Go ahead, Andy.
Yeah, great show as usual, George. Yes, thank I'd you. Like to know if there is any factual evidence-based information that can be verified in a scientific lab setting that there's undisputable proof that this creature does exist, number one. And is your opinion that this is something that is interdimensional, that can come in and out of our reality and look and do things just like us and then suddenly disappear? And I'd be interested in getting your take on that, on those two questions.
Andy, they tried some DNA of hair strands, Dr. Melba Ketchum, and I'm not sure they were really conclusive because there are two camps, and one says yes, one says no. But go ahead, Tim.
Well, I think that's part of the phenomenon, the inconclusive thing. There are lots of stories of hunters who shoot the creatures, and the bodies always disappear. They're always either taken by some shadowy government organization that you know, nameless black helicopter or something, or the hunter will leave and come back, and it's presumed that other creatures take the body away. The DNA tests always come back inconclusive. Or often. Almost everything but sound recordings. Ron Moorhead has had some really, really great work done with the recordings he made that definitely seem to show something, you know, using some kind of language. And footprints. There's been a lot of great work with the footprint casts and so forth that seem to show that something big and real, you know, left these footprints behind. But, you know, they won't accept anything more than that, science in general, I believe.
If you had to bet the ranch, Tim, what would you bet?
I would bet that it's probably a mystery that we're not going to solve in my lifetime. But like I said before, I do believe it's real. Something's leaving hair and footprints behind, and people are seeing something. but it acts in a way that we don't quite understand yet.
Next up, let's go. And Andy, thank you for your call. Appreciate it. Let's go to Donald in Florida. Welcome to the program. Hi, Don. Go ahead.
Oh, well, hello, George and Timothy.
Hi there.
Hello.
Yeah, I was calling. I'm in South Florida now, but I spent most of my life in Pennsylvania. And I don't want to disclose the location, but there was a large body of water, a lake, and we would be camping out, and we weren't looking for Bigfoot. I didn't even know there was a Bigfoot. But, you know, just kind of like what you said before, we were looking for firewood. It was two or three in the morning, and long story short, we saw this creature in the water. And it looked like it was, actually, it looked like it was fishing, like, you know, feeling around, like people, they catch catfish with their hands, you know, like in Georgia and different places. It looked like it was doing that, and it was just doing things that weren't normal, like first we thought it was a person, but it's a real mucky, bottom, you know, backwater, and, you know, 3 a.m, it's like 3-4 feet deep, and he would go all the way down to, or just as like his nostrils would be out, like, you know, and stay there for, you know, 5, 6, 8 minutes, then stand up, move around. And the thing, my question is it did things that, you know, we've soon realized it wasn't a person, but I went down to get a closer look, and when I got down to the water's edge and it stood up, it was so huge and massive, and I couldn't tell, you know, it was a creature. You know, I couldn't see distinct details, but it was a really, really large creature. And it was like a man. But the thing is I strained to get a better look because I couldn't believe what I was looking at. And I was probably like 40 feet from it. And I was kind of hid behind some brush and stuff, and I stepped on a twig, and in an instant it went out of the water. It was like probably, you know, 30 feet from shore, and, you know, in a mucky mud environment, 3-4 feet of water, you know, you'd really strain and struggle to get out of that water. It just went out like it was like a bird skimming the water. It just went instantly, was out of the water and on the bank. And anyway, my question is, after that time, I, you know, started paying attention about different things about these creatures, and it seems like the Indians said it was like a great honor to be able to see one. It's more like it's a spiritual type of a being, and like it's not only physical but also spiritual, because it's just not possible for it to do what it did. That was my question.
Well, you get a lot of reports that these are somewhat dimensional, maybe spiritual, Tim?
Yeah, and that seems to be an element. And the different Native American tribes, interestingly, will report it in different ways. Some will call it a stone giant, and they'll say that, you know, they're natural creatures. Some, they're, you know, cannibals to be feared. Some, they are spiritual beings. Some, they are treated almost like our brothers of the forest. So just as we do today, have all these, you know, these different people with different opinions as to what the creatures are and how they behave, the Native Americans did as well. They didn't have one view of them across every tribe. So it really kind of depends on the tribe you ask.
Well, it sure does. And do you think we'll ever get the answer? Because where are the skeletons? How come we can't find them?
Yeah, that's one of the big questions. Where's the body? It'd be great to get a body. And when I say this stuff, I believe me, I'd love to be proven wrong. I'd love for somebody to at someday get a body and we could know that it's just a undiscovered ape or a relic hominid. That would be a lot easier to write about and to talk about and to research. That.
Well, I'd like to see a body as long as it's not shot.
Sure, yeah.
You know, but I'm afraid that could happen too. What about some of these people who dress up like Bigfoot? Aren't they taking their lives into their own hands?
Absolutely. I would not recommend doing that. No hoax is worth your life.
Would a guy get charged with murder or even manslaughter if somebody was in a Bigfoot costume and he shot it and killed it?
I would think so. I would think.
I don't think he would. I think they'd let him off.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, they you know, he might be charged with endangerment to an animal or something if they have any laws in the county where this might have happened. But, I mean, the guy could clearly say, this thing scared the heck out of me. I was worried about my own safety. I mean, you if a bear attacks you and you shoot it, you're not going to go to jail for that.
No, that's true.
And in this case, you know, if a guy's in a costume and he's charging you, or, you know, he's just in the woods and you're afraid, I don't think you're going to get charged with anything.
Yeah, I don't know. I wouldn't put it to test. It might depend on the judge.
I would not want to be in either person's situation.
Exactly, yeah.
Let's go to Cindy, truck driving in Arizona. Hi, Cindy, go ahead.
Hey, yeah, I'm originally from Michigan, and I was just wondering if he'd ever seen any sightings or heard of any sightings up there in the UP area. And also, I got a second part. Do they make any kind of sounds? You know, like...
They do have a howling sound, but go ahead. Anything up in Michigan, Tim?
Oh, yeah. I have a few reports I've collected. I'll get, you know, as I go into that part of the country to start collecting more, I'm sure I'll find a lot more, but I already have a few reports, sure.
Okay. Yeah, that's what I really wanted to know, was because I've got cousins and family that have cabins up there and stuff. So after you were talking about cannibalism, it kind of made me a little nervous.
All right. Whereabouts from Michigan were you from, Cindy?
I'm from the lower, they call me the troll because I'm from the lower part of Michigan and Mitten. I'm from Jackson, Michigan.
Oh, sure. No, well, the racetrack out there, right?
Oh, yeah. Jackson Harness Race.
Yeah, I'm from Detroit. Yeah, so.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Very familiar with that.
I grew up by that track. My dad used to take me out there when I was a little kid.
brings back memories, doesn't it?
Yes, it does.
I love it. Thanks, Cindy. By the way, we've got open lines coming up next hour for you. We're here with your phone calls with Timothy Renner as we talk about Bigfoot and his work. And when you publish your books, what has been the reaction to these stories from people who read it in the areas that you've written the book about?
Usually, and the West Coast one has just come out, it might be less so with that because Bigfoot's such a known thing in the West Coast. But in Pennsylvania, it's a lot of people are like, I didn't know. I didn't know Bigfoot was here. I thought it was a West Coast phenomenon.
Little did they know, right?
Oh, yeah.
Next up, we go to Pat in Ohio. Welcome to the program, Pat. Go ahead.
Yes, hello, Mr. Norrie. Hello, Tim.
Hey, Pat.
It's hello. Nice to talk to you. I have an aunt and cousins that live in Pennsylvania. They have farms. My aunt has 126 acres, and my cousin, 200. They live a few miles outside of Mercer, Pennsylvania. And there's nothing but woods all around. There's acres and acres and acres, hundreds of acres. And my aunt's farm is several hundred years old. It's from the Civil War time. And they have a huge barn there. And at night, there's been times when they've heard something in the barn. And it's gotten pretty scary. I mean, we used to go there summer times when I was a kid. And we'd stay 2 weeks, you know, and just hear funny noises out there at night. And then my cousin, she's still living out there. She's 80 years old. She's going to be 81. And she's had some strange things happen on her property, too.
They're everywhere.
Yeah, I have several reports from Mercer in the Bigfoot in Pennsylvania book. So it's a long history of them in that area.
Tim, what are the shamans? What have they done about Bigfoot? Do they think that they're religious creatures or more physical?
Again, I think it depends who you talk to. A lot of them are very cautionary. Some will be more kind towards them. Like I said, some will kind of consider them our forest brothers. You're really not going to get one opinion across the board from any group, I don't think.
How do you find the stories?
Well, these old stories, I just dig and dig and dig. And
see the article in the old newspaper or something?
Yeah. And for every one report that I think is probably speaking about a Bigfoot creature. I'll throw out 20 reports of wild men that were definitely humans they were talking about, because sometimes in these old reports, a wild man could just be, you know, a miner or something that roamed into town that had long hair or something, or a homeless person or some kind of itinerant.
Sure. First-time caller Jim in Twain Hart, California is with us. Hi, Jim. Go ahead.
Hey, I can't believe I'm talking to you guys.
You made it.
Yeah. Yeah, I want to tell you some I never was pro Bigfoot or against Bigfoot. I never passed judgment on it because I knew nothing about it. About 2 years ago, I have a remote cabin. I'm at 4,000 foot in the Sierras.
Okay.
And I stepped out of my cabin one night about 9 o'clock, just 2 years ago in January, and 9 o'clock at night. And I'm out there looking at the stars, and a holler came out from my neighbor's cabin, which is about 200 feet, just up the side of the a slight slope above me. And this howl, it was like no animal I have ever heard before. It was a long howl, and the interesting thing about it was the voice. It was so big. The creature had to be like, I would say, 600-800 pounds because of the volume that came out of the mouth of
the
roar,
animal. Yeah. Did you also find that the insects went silent?
You know, I did. I don't even remember anything about the insects. But I'll tell you this: that howl, the voice box was so clean, so pure with that sound. That was part of the fascination about it, and it was a long, big set of lungs, and it howled about twice. And at that, then I went into my cabin and I got my .38. I wasn't afraid. I just had in a flashlight. I just had to see what that was.
Yeah.
So I went outside. I forgot that I got a fence up the hill, so I couldn't see nothing in front of this guy's house. But when I was outside, this creature come down the drive closer to my house, howled a couple more times, and then ran over, because I can hear it, it's dark, but then it ran over the mountainside. Now, what's interesting is about 2 weeks later, I hear this same pattern of howling, but it sounds like there's about three of these creatures, and it sounds like, I'm guesstimating, it's got to be this animal's kids, because the volume wasn't there. The voices were didn't have that adult.
They sounded volume. Smaller, huh?
Oh, they sounded smaller. They were, and what was strange, they put out something that was like a giggle, intermittently between their howls.
Really, like a hyena?
Well, you know, I thought of that, but no. This is. I don't think that's the case. I don't think it was a wolf. The only sound I haven't looked into is a wolf. We don't supposedly have wolves here, but I tell you what, my neighbor came back about a week after this, and the same young ones, it sounded like, were right at his house, same place.
All right, let's get your take on this, Tim, when we come back in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM with more phone calls as well. So don't touch your dial. We'll be right back. Well, they're signing up for our Feb 13th luncheon with Dr. Sky in Los Angeles. Come on by. I'd love to chat with you, and we'll have a great time. He's one heck of an expert on astronomy. Send an email with your phone number at lunchwithgeorge@gmail.com, lunchwithgeorge@gmail.com. And welcome back to Coast with our special guest, Timothy Renner, as we talk about Bigfoot. I'll have open lines for you starting next hour, so get ready to make those calls. And we're going to go right back to your phone calls as well. So, Tim, your West Coast book just came out. How do people get it?
Amazon's probably easiest for everybody.
And the full title is Bigfoot West Coast Wild Man, right?
Yes.
Or Wild Men?
Wild Men, yes.
Super, super. What do some of your sketches look like? I mean, I've seen them on the website, but kind of explain them to people.
My specialty is kind of pen and ink illustration. I was drawn to that at a young age and kind of went into that. So it's a lot of pen and ink illustration. I've done some like comic book work, but not a heck of a lot of it. Mostly it's just been book illustration and, like I said, a lot of record covers.
Did you start off doing stick men when you were a kid?
The only story I remember is I grew up on a farm. I was the youngest of six kids, and when I would, you know, go to mom, all my other siblings were older. They were, you know, so they never wanted me hanging around them and stuff.
Right.
So I'd go to mom and, "Oh, mom, I'm bored," and she'd always say, "Well, draw a picture." So from a very young age, that's what I did. Whenever I was, you know, I'd sit down and I'd draw pictures. And the only thing I remember is that one of the pediatricians I had said I was age six or something, and said I drew, you know, like, he draws like a 10-year-old. He doesn't draw like a 6-year-old. So
we were talking about the sounds that Bigfoot makes.
Yes.
And the howls and things, and they do make a distinctive sound, don't they?
They have a whole catalog of sounds. A lot of screams, they'll report them. In the old articles, they call them a lot of times unearthly screams or demonic yells and so forth. But people still report it today. Some very disturbing things. Sometimes people report that they will learn the names of pets or even people, children, and call them from the woods, which is very, very disturbing.
And let me ask you about some of the sounds that might be out there. Are they distress sounds ever?
Not to my knowledge. I mean, they could be. We don't know what they're saying or doing or why they're doing it. My feeling is if they're learning, you know, English words, they're probably not learning the language. They're doing mimicry of some sort, but we don't know why. Are they trying to lure people out there? Are they just imitating things they hear?
Well, that's true too. And I'm beginning to, you know, for years, I always thought that this was a physical being. And I still do to some respect, but I'm beginning to think that they could be dimensional.
It certainly would explain a lot of the very bizarre reports, like creatures walking. There's reports in Pennsylvania where people will see them walking on one side of the road, disappear, and reappear on the other side of the road. That's just very bizarre. That, you know, it's very hard to come up with a physical explanation for that. The footprints that go off into the middle of fields and just stop with no apparent backtracking in the tracks. Things like that could certainly be explained if there was some sort of dimensional element. So.
Let's go to the Hawaiian island of Maui. Archer's with us. Archer, welcome back. Go ahead.
Aloha, gentlemen. Very nice to be with you.
Thank you, sir.
I will do as best I can to edit this story. There are a number of details that are pertinent. It's 1974. I was in Neyland, California, 1,500 feet, and just inland from Arcata. I had been doing both yogic and shamanic practices for the previous 10 months, including reducing my diet to fruit and fruit juice, and then eventually juice, and then 10 days on water, pure water, and also doing the practice of mauna, which is no verbal communication. And I'd been doing this for 10 weeks, and people came, friends who were letting me stay in their place, invited me to go on a journey with them, and I just nodded a little and smiled, and off we went. We went down into the valley. It was hot. It was late in August, but at the same time, very hot and dry there. They stopped. They found a place to pick berries and things, and then after dusk, we were back up. We were on back up in the mountains. I'm not sure exactly where, but there's some Indian hot springs, and we had learned on the way, I'd been told that the angstroms of this water were, 14,500 angstroms, which an angstrom, of course, is 1/100 millionth of a centimeter. So we're measuring vibrations of water and other things. In a papaya, it might be 600. In other food, it might be 400. So in any case, this is huge. Well, there was no one there. I started drinking the water right away. I was very, very thirsty. It had been hot and dry. And I took two quarts with me when they led me by flashlight a ways up this little river. So I got in my sleeping bag, said goodnight, see you tomorrow, thank you very much. I was bloody cold. It was about 40 degrees. It had been hot in the day. Got in my sleeping bag. Some kind of a glow came over me. I don't know what it was, but I found myself getting up, taking off my clothes, stark raving naked, barefooted, and walking through the woods.
Jesus.
Along this mountain stream, and off to either side, there were these little abutments and little cliffs, and were an old, old stream. And I walked through the woods. I could see a few twinkling stars every now and then, but it was dense, I didn't step on a twig. I kept stepping over logs and things as though I knew exactly where I was going. I got to a point where I made a turn, went up, and leaned back against the edge of this abutment or the edge of the cliff coming down. And the first thing that happened was I had this awful experience. It was almost admonishing me, well, where's your skin? Where's your fur? Because when I leaned back against the rocks, where was my fur? And I was kind of embarrassed by it. And then I started having these images. And it was images around the bend in this stream and down a little ways. I'd never heard of a Bigfoot in my life. I knew about Yeti and things, but I had no knowledge of any such creature or anything like that. And I started seeing these images. I've never had a recollection of any previous incarnation or anything, but suddenly here I was as though I were somehow almost being admonished for being naked and for, wait a bit. I must tell you, it was a very disoriented experience. I've been thinking about it ever since. But something was projected into me. I don't know how I did that. Got up and walked through the woods. I didn't, not a twig, not a sound, just glided through it. And I've never done anything like that before since. And I just wonder, I mean, who did that? Who moved me? What happened? I know my vibration was off the scale of where I'd ever been before.
And you really didn't see anything, though, right?
I didn't see anything except mentally. In other words, nothing visible, but quite startlingly visible in full color.
Well, let me ask you this, Tim. Is it possible that what Archer was experiencing was the life of a Bigfoot in some form or fashion?
I suppose it's possible. The thing that really jumped out, what he said to me, is he felt like he was gliding through the woods. And a lot of witnesses will report when they see these creatures walk, they'll say it looked like it was gliding. It looked like it was moving without effort. So that's what really jumped out to me about his story.
Let's go to Deborah in Albuquerque, New Mexico. Hi, Deborah.
Yeah, so I had a cousin up on the Alaskan pipeline in 1970, and the men were sitting out around 10 p.m., he said. He was a young man then. And one of these things appeared by a large piece of the machinery they were using on that pipeline and screamed at them to get out, and picked up a big combine sized tire and threw it into the fire, causing, of course, that bonfire to, you know, burn the men, hurt some of them. And they scrambled and it took off into the woods. And they said from the light, they could see that it could climb the tree and was transferring trees and then disappeared into the woods.
Huh.
And so there's also a show on History Channel on YouTube that's fairly recent of scientists from around the world that were sent up to Quebec to study something else. And they started to be attacked by Bigfoot. And they did get some samples of the tissue of his foot and sent it to a private lab, and it was 70% some kind of unknown ape and 30% human. And you can watch that on YouTube.
Yeah, that's a good show.
Now, Boone had an encounter with one and chased it, and it went into a cave system. There's also one encounter with a child where they do speak to children. They do kidnap children. And it is on a thing called One Step Beyond, and that's on YouTube. And that happened back in the late 40s.
I believe that's a great show.
The giants mentioned in the Bible. The only way you can kill them is hit them directly in the face, because their bone structure is so strong that a bullet lodges in it. And this seems to be the story around the world. I do thank this author for his work. I believe they should be actually hunted. I believe that they are responsible for a lot of the missing people. I do believe they are eating them.
What do you think of that, Tim?
Well, the screaming, the throwing heavy objects, again, this is behavior we hear all the time. I would tend to agree with her. I think that they occasionally are responsible for missing people. It's a scary thing to hear. It's a scary thing to think about. And, you know, of course, it's not a whole heck of a lot of proof, but, you know, the circumstantial evidence seems to point that way.
We've got one of our guests, David Weatherly, who's written a book on the black-eyed children, and he believes that these creatures are physical beings who have the ability to move between dimensions as we move from, you know, one area to another. Isn't that something?
Yeah, yeah, and I've written something for David's series of Bigfoot journals he has called Woodnox. I think in volume 3 I'll have a piece in there. So I'm familiar with David's work.
Tim, we got a little sound of what was sent to us many years ago, purported to be of a Bigfoot out in the woods. Let's listen, and then I'll get your reaction to it.
Sure.
What do you think of that?
Yeah, I've heard things like that from all over the country. It's almost like a klaxon horn. It is not, you know, it's some sort of creature. But yeah, that's pretty impressive.
It does not sound like anything I would know or identify.
No, I don't believe that's a coyote.
First time caller Alan in Dayton, Ohio's with us now. Alan, go ahead.
Hey, George, it's a pleasure to talk to you.
Thank you.
I'm kind of embarrassed because I didn't want to be one of the people. It was made fun of saying that they saw a Bigfoot.
But, you don't have to worry about that.
Back in the day when I was a younger man, I was driving a truck down in Georgia, and I picked up a load of mulch, and I'm going down this two-lane road, and I don't remember exact area. I remember looking at my atlas as I was driving. It was above Jacksonville, Florida, but on the Georgia side. And some kind of a national park there, like an Indian name, like Okeechobee or something like that. But as I'm driving, I seen what looked like I thought was a bear or something getting ready to cross the road. And I'd never seen nothing like that because I'm from Ohio. And I'd been staring at the ditch line because I was looking at like a planted forest. I'd never seen, you know, planted forest before. It was all pine trees, like symmetrically lined up and everything. So I see this bear start to come out across the ditch and cross the road. So I start covering my brake, and I'm like, oh, my God, I'm going to hit a bear. And it turned and looked at me, and its face was flat. And it didn't have the big nose like a bear did. And I'm like, oh, what the heck is that? And it didn't look big and heavy like everybody describes it. It looked big and hunched over just like a Bigfoot, but it looked skinny, like it had really long hair, but it was skinny. And the thing that was ties into this dimensional thing for me, and this I had this thought before I ever heard anybody talking about it, is it looked at me at the truck, and then it turned its head, and like a streak of lightning, it went back into the woods from where it come. And all the trunks on the trees, they didn't really have branches on the low levels. And so I'm looking at it, trying to look at it running through the woods, you know, to make sure I seen what I saw.
Mm-hmm.
And it just vanished, just like everybody's saying, it vanished.
Yeah, just like it went right through some other portal or a dimension, right?
Exactly. And, you know, there's no way these trees weren't full grown. They were maybe 6 to 8 inches, the trunk diameter, and everything was in a perfect line. There's absolutely no way it could have hid behind a tree. It turned like a streak of lightning. I saw it run about 10 feet, and then it just vanished. And so I'm pulling over on the side, rubbing my eyes, like, have I been on the road too long? But then all these years later, I keep hearing everybody talking about the dimensional thing, and that fits perfect with, you know, never finding a body and all that kind of stuff. So anyways, it was just nice to get that off my chest and let you know and see if you had any thoughts about that.
Okay, go ahead, Tim. Thanks for the call, Alan.
I'm very thankful that when people come forward.
Oh, my gosh. It's gutsy, too.
Yes. Yeah, I think witness stories are at this point, you know, our best evidence. I believe I could listen to witness reports all day. But, yeah, I mean, I'm not surprised. It's just another one of those strange things that enough people have reported that where you have to at least take it into consideration. You can't write it off and say, well, he didn't see what he said he saw. You have to at least, like, put it down and, you know, consider what he said because other people are reporting the same kind of thing where they're just disappearing.
It's an amazing phenomenon. Do you ever think we're going to get the answer to this?
Sadly, you know, we've been recording these things as long as we've been keeping records. There's paintings of them on cave walls. There's in medieval manuscripts, they have references to them. And we haven't gotten the answer yet. Sadly, I don't think so. I would love it if we did. I would be very, very happy. at some point when you're researching this stuff, you have to come to terms with, I might not get the answers, and you then make the decision whether you're going to continue with research or just kind of give up, or a lot of people just decide it's a demon or something and go on with things. And they may be right, but like I said, I don't think we have any real answer as to exactly what these are.
Tim, take 30 seconds and give the titles of your books and your website, please.
My first book was Beyond the Seventh Gate. My second book was Bigfoot West Coast Wildmen. And I'm sorry, my third book is Bigfoot West Coast Wildmen. And my second book was Bigfoot in Pennsylvania. The two Bigfoot books are the historical Bigfoot articles.
And the website?
DarkHollowArts.com. And you can find me also at StrangeFamiliars.com.
Super. And you're still doing the podcast?
Yes, sir. Yes.
Excellent. How do they hear that? Through the website?
That's StrangeFamiliars.com. Yeah, you'll find us there.
Okay, excellent. Okay, thank you, Tim. And Tom wants to talk to you, so I'm going to put you on hold. And we're going to come back in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM with open lines for the next 2 hours. Anything goes.